This is O'Reilly Week in Review for February 23rd, 2009. I'm James Turner, contributing editor at O'Reilly Media, and on this edition of O'Reilly Week in Review, we'll have a roundtable discussion among the O'Reilly editors about how the new stimulus package may affect alternative energy. We'll have excerpts of an interview with Dr. Nathan Wolf, who will be attending the O'Reilly Emerging Technologies Conference, talking about how he's doing surveillance work, watching for new viruses that may be crossing over from animals to humans, and we'll have the new pod quiz. All that on O'Reilly Week in Review. It's time for our weekly chat with O'Reilly editors Kurt Cagle and Tim O'Brien. This week we're going to talk about some of the alternative energy provisions in the new Obama stimulus package and what that might mean to the alternative energy industry. Why don't we start with you, Kurt? What is your impression of how this could positively or negatively affect the existing alternative energy infrastructure?
The way that the bill is set up right now, there are a number of different provisions that are specifically set up for energy-related work. Among them is a fairly significant portion that's simply tax-related. That's to say, it either extends existing taxes or it opens up the possibility of new taxes in those industries such as solar, wind, et cetera, that have already been receiving some tax breaks. Additionally, much of the stimulus package specific to energy is looking at the development of energy infrastructure, specifically energy infrastructure around effective grid use. One of the big issues that we're facing right now in terms of the current grid is that, you know, it's antiquated. Most of it was put up in the 1930s and early 1940s as part of the various acts like the Tennessee Valley Authority Electrification Act. And in the process, most of that was designed specifically for a population that was roughly maybe a fourth of what it is right now, and certainly in terms of energy use, maybe a tenth of what the current usage is. So much of the new provisions that exist right now are not so much specific towards funding energy sources, although there is some of that as well, but more specifically is built towards building the infrastructure, the computer infrastructure, the sales and movement of electricity from point to point.
One of the whole issues with existing alternative energy schemes, especially things like solar, is that a lot of where there is solar, especially in the Southwest, is not necessarily where you want the power, which is, for example, in the Northeast. I guess some of the thought about improving the grid other than efficiency improvements is to be able to get that energy around more easily from where it's plentiful to where it's needed. What have you been hearing, Tim?
Well, the thing I noticed, I watched the joint press conference with Prime Minister of Canada, I think it's Stephen Harper. I know that they both talked about a joint coordinated investment in the grid. I think that that's extremely important. I majored in electrical engineering in college, and I know from experience that the infrastructure that this country has for power distribution is just completely ancient. So I think a few years back, one line in central Ohio brought down the power distribution to the city of New York. So clearly, if you think that our bridges are bad in the Northeast, you should take a look at your power lines. So that's probably one of the most significant places where we lose a lot of energy. The other thing I'm thinking recently, I mean, if you fill up your gas tank, the thing that you'll notice is that gas is definitely not expensive. I think a global economic depression is definitely not what the environmental movement needed. So it'll be interesting to see if tax credits are enough to convince people to shift to alternative energy production. But other than that, I can't help but think, I live in Chicago, so we are essentially in a constant struggle with the earth for about 6 months out of every year. The thing that would help the environment the most, and I know it's not a popular suggestion, is if we just all moved to Florida, and I just can't stop thinking about that over this last
month. You forget, sir, that then you're going to pay for air conditioning for half of the year.
I know. I just can't get past the idea that, you know, we're all living in too cold a climate, so...
Watch out, San Diego. We're all moving there. One of the things that I noticed in the Northeast is we have a 100 or 150 wind turbine project that's been proposed for northern New Hampshire, where the winds blow all the time. If you've ever been up on Mount Washington, for example, it has the worst winds on Earth. But so they're not planning to put them quite there, but on some of the smaller hills. And the NIMBYs have come out in full force. It's, you're going to ruin our skyline, you know, this is pristine forest, yada, yada, yada. And it's really fascinating to see that a lot of the people who were all rah-rah about saving the environment as long as it didn't impact them directly, it's like, okay, if we're despoiling the coal mines of Pennsylvania, but God, please don't put a windmill up on my hill.
And I think that that points to a problem in the environmental movement. A lot of the quote-unquote environmentalists that you speak to, they're doing it for reasons of aesthetics. They're doing it because it's the good thing to do. They're not doing it because they've done a numerical, statistical analysis of what is right and what is wrong. So I think a lot of times you get people who are environmentalists until it really directly changes the way that they have to live. So sort of, you know, someone driving a Prius who happens to be, you know, consistently going to a fast food restaurant that promotes really bad agricultural use of land. There's a lot of work to be done in really selling the mathematical, the scientific case for being an environmentalist. Right now, it's just, do you want to wear cool clothes and be hip?
Last quick thought from you, Kurt?
I think that the current challenges that this administration is going to have to face is that it's going to have to weave its way both through a fairly large conservative populace that is still largely in denial about the fact that, well, that the carbon limitations that we're talking about are going to have an effect, and they may not necessarily have the desired environmental effect that many of the environmentalists want. There are a number of provisions within the energy bill which are going to be controversial for the ecology movement, just as there are going to be a number that are going to be controversial for conservative businesses. Now, there are projects such as coal gasification, which sounds good on paper, but when you actually get down to the mechanics, there's some real question about whether, in fact, it's sufficient to be able to do it. If we can manage coal gasification projects and manage to harness that in a way that's clean and effective and handle the carbon output, then we basically have achieved independence in terms of energy, because the U.S. has far more coal at this point than it does any other resources. So I see a big part of this whole process essentially being how skillful Obama is going to be in negotiating both with the left and with the right in terms of being able to get his passage done.
Well, I've been speaking with editors Kurt Cagle and Tim O'Brien. We'll be back again next week to give our opinion on some other interesting topic. There's nothing more depressing to a host than having a question that nobody answers. Unfortunately, that's what happened last week with our pod quiz. I asked why it would be that Apple would be unwise to have the policy that many stores do of giving you a free product or discount if you left the store without a receipt. The reason, as anyone who's ever gone to an Apple store will know, is that customers are offered the option to have their receipts emailed to them instead of taking a paper receipt. Since no one got the answer, no one gets a book for this week, but we'll have a new question later in the show, and you can get your chance to win a copy of any O'Reilly book you want. In advance of O'Reilly's upcoming Emerging Technologies Conference, we've been speaking to some of the people who are going to be speaking there. One of the people we spoke to last week was Dr. Nathan Wolf, who talked to us about his work in forecasting new viral outbreaks by looking for crossovers from animals to humans in areas where contact between the two is frequent.
Well, what we do is we actually focus on the interface between humans and animal populations. When we looked back and investigated the ways in which diseases got started, the ways that pandemics really originated, what we found is that really the vast majority of these things are animal diseases. So rather than sort of monitoring for illness, at which point it could potentially be too late, we've taken it one step backward, and we actually focus on people who have high levels of contact with animals, and we set up large groups of these individuals and monitor the diseases that they have as well as the diseases in the animal populations. And the idea is to be able to catch these things a little bit earlier.
Look for the complete interview of Dr. Wolf on the O'Reilly Radar site. And remember that there's still time to sign up for the Emerging Technology Conference at the early bird rate. And now it's time for this week's pod quiz, your chance to win a free O'Reilly book. The question this week comes from the world of patents. Many people feel software patents are fairly odious, but a recent ruling in the Federal Circuit may change the entire landscape for software patents. For a chance at this week's prize, please tell us what the name of that decision was that may overturn many software patents. If you know the answer, email it to podquiz, P-O-D-Q-U-I-Z, at O'Reilly.com. If you're the first person with the correct answer, you'll get your choice of any in-print O'Reilly book, or if you live outside the United States, you'll get your choice of any electronic edition of one of our books. Good luck. That's it for this week's edition of O'Reilly Week in Review. Next week, we'll have more interviews, a new quiz, a new roundtable discussion with some of the editors, and who knows what else may pop up. The theme music for O'Reilly Week in Review is provided by Father Rock. I'm James Turner for O'Reilly Media.